Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome and hello. This is Joseph G. with Rum Radio and rumradio.org, the most comprehensive 12-step sponsorship in the known and the unknown universe. Tonight we're going to be talking about Sister Ignatia. The title of the piece that's on the website is The First Chipmunk Started with a Habit, Sister Ignatia. So before we get into that, I'd like to acknowledge WNAH, Hoyt Carter, and Tony the Horse, who affords us the opportunity to broadcast live to the listening audience in Nashville, parts of Kentucky, and Arkansas as a public service presentation. We would also like to acknowledge RecoveryToday.net magazine. It's one of the finer recovery journals and affords us some print space from time to time. I gratefully like to introduce my co-host, Harold B., a family intervention specialist. He does a fine work with troubled families, and I personally believe the families are the basic unit of our society, and as the family goes, so does the country, the nation, and the world. Harold?
Hello, Joseph, and hello, everybody. It's nice to be back with you, and this is my way of giving back. This is also Joseph's way of giving back. There's no money made on this site or the radio program. The site is rumradio.org, and the radio program is all about working with others and how to really make your recovery solid. In fact, not only doesn't Joseph make any money, but he's sunk thousands into the website at his own expense, and that's his way of getting back. So we're here to help you if you've been in recovery a long time or if you're new to recovery, and help you understand it's relatively easy to stop drinking or drugging. And
Harold,
what the people I talk to find...
Harold, go ahead. You're breaking up really bad. I could barely make out what you're saying.
Oh, my. Must be our computer network link. Well, anyway, we're here to give back. We don't make any money, and let's go on with the program.
Okay. Well, that's the way it is sometimes. Thank you, Harold, and, you know, the computer world. It just seemed lately, I don't know if it's just, it just seems that there's a lot of problems. I think a lot of people are on the computers more than ever before, and I think some of the servers are probably getting overloaded at this point. I don't think they really...
I think that's true. Actually, you're breaking up a little bit too, Joseph, so we'll just have to hope for the best tonight.
Really? Yeah, that happens sometimes with Skype, and it's... I don't know why. Sometimes it's perfect, sometimes it's not, but I've noticed the general degrading, taking longer times and messages not getting met and things like that. So I believe this is part of the technological age. We're at the jumping off point. We need some new technology, and I'm entitled to new technology on a daily basis. Did you ever hear of the quickening, Harold?
Where did I hear about that?
Probably from me. It's a concept that during the end of times, that man's knowledge will increase exponentially, and it's a sign of the end of days.
That makes sense. My first sponsor said that life... is like a roll of toilet paper. When you get to the end, it goes faster and faster. Is that similar?
Amen. Not quite, but that's a good analogy. I like that analogy.
Close enough for recovery work.
Yes, it is. Well, tonight...
Hey, how do I click on Sister Ignatia? I'm on your site. Where do I click?
Well, you have to you double click the picture when she comes up on the gallery.
Oh,
it'll have
how do I gallery?
The gallery is the pictures that are in front of your face. The ones that are changing.
There it is. There it is. I got it. Hey, all right. That works.
That's like so that's old guys.
Go to the home page and double-click her picture.
Don't you like old guys in technology? It's all brand new every day.
Yeah.
I heard...
Was she drunk?
Pardon me?
Was Sister Ignatia a drinker?
No.
Okay.
I had her. We're going to get into it. I got a little bit of her bio in there and who she was and some of that. So they give it's a good little thumbnail of who she was and what she does. But before we do that, I like to start with the third step prayer. I also call it the surrender prayer. I like to do that to open up the program on a spiritual note. This is one of the first assignments I give my sponsees, a new sponsee, is to call someone in the program for the next 30 days, one person at a time, and ask permission to recite this prayer. It accomplishes several things. One, it gets them used to picking up the 500-pound telephone and asking for help. Two, it gets them connected up with his home group. Everybody needs a home group. They get to know his name, and he gets to know their name. The third step prayer also encapsulates what we're going to try to accomplish by working all 12 steps. And lastly, the person he's calling might have been thinking about taking his first drink of alcohol, and chances are he will not. So your sponsee is already into service work. It's the one immunity we have from alcohol is intensive work with another alcoholic. This activity works when other activities fail. This is the prayer. I offer myself to do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always. Can I get an amen on that?
Amen. That's a great prayer.
So we're ready to go, and we're going to talk. I'm going to give out the guest call-in number. It's 949-534-0621. Again, 949-534-0621. Tonight, I usually would mention this, but tonight we were supposed to have an interview with Dr. Linda Slavin, and it was going to be a really good interview, and somehow we weren't able to connect up. It's a Facebook deal. She says that she wrote back confirmed, and I never got it, and I asked why. So I don't know what happened. And so I scheduled the discussion about Sister Ignatia. I'm hoping Linda will forgive me for this lapse, and that we'll be able to do it again in the future. I see we have a caller. Let me see who's. Hello, caller. Who are you? Hello, someone there? Hello? Anybody home?
Well, sometimes if they don't press the one, then they don't want to talk.
Oh, I see. Okay, they don't want to talk. All right. Don't
so
talk.
So tell people, tell our audience if they want to call in and talk, dial the number, press 1. If they don't want to talk, they can just listen.
Okay, all right. Yeah, that's true. You have to dial the 1. I didn't know, does it come in, Ada, the show on the board? I didn't know if it would show on the board if they didn't dial 1.
I can't remember if it shows on the board or not.
Well, this guy's showing on the board. But anyway, I evidently doesn't want to talk. You know, the number one fear is speaking in public. Did you know that?
Yes.
It's more so than the death of the body, the death of a child, the loss of a job, home, or even a wife. And the reason for that is because ridicule is death to the ego. And the ego will sacrifice the body on the altar of pride in a vain attempt to stay alive. Vanities of vanities, all is vanity. So don't worry about it. This isn't a big deal. If you got something to say, we're more than glad to listen to you. So, Sister Ignatia, what an interesting name. I think that's the name she took as her as a spiritual name. And I have the title of the piece as the first chipmunk started with a habit, Sister Ignatia. Now, if you don't know what that means, it's a play on words. It's called a double entendre. Now, the monk, a monk's in the monastery, we give out chips. They're called milestones in recovery, or there's a beginner's chip or a desire chip, and then we have 30-day chips and 60-day chips. And the person, some groups or clubs, it designates someone from time to time to give them out, and we call them euphemistically as chipmunks, you know, like the little chipmunk she's going to give out or he's going to give out the chips. And Sister Ignatia was a nun who wore a habit, and a habit is also the beginnings of an addiction. So the first chipmunk started with a habit, Sister Ignatia. The beginning of the beginner's chip, or the desire chip. She's the one who started it.
Oh, is that right? I see. Now things are making more sense.
The beginning of the beginner's chip, or the desire chip, an outward sign of an inward commitment to try our way of life, and that means to stay sober for 24 hours. Are there any takers? If it doesn't work for you, we will gladly refund your misery. This is heard in AA meetings and NA meetings, CA meetings all over the world. So the beginner's chip is how it started. She's the one who started it. This is where it started. This is the beginning of the beginner's chip. In 1950, the year of his death, Dr. Bob Smith carried the AA message to more than 5,000 alcoholic men and women, and to all these, he gave his medical service without thought of charge. So often say that Dr. Bob had sponsored 5,000 men. This is where the 5,000 comes in. This is the 5,000. These are the 5,000 that came into the hospital that he treated for alcoholism. In the prodigy of service, he was well assisted by Sister Ignatia. And she was little also known as the Little Angel. I think she weighed soaking wet about 90 pounds.
She had such a sweet face.
Doesn't she? At St. Thomas Hospital in Akron, Ohio, and one of the greatest friends our fellowship will ever know, that comes from Dr. Bob's Nightmare, AA Big Book, page 171. Sister Ignatia was born in Ireland as Bridget Della Mary Gavin, little Irish lass, on January 2nd, 1889, at the Shan Valley Burn in County Mayo. Hold the Mayo. Having moved to the United States in 1914, she entered the Sisters of Charity of St. Augustine in Ohio, at which time she took the name Sister Mary Ignatia. A superb musician, she was assigned to teach music. She did this for about 10 years, but found it too hectic and suffered a nervous breakdown. I found that interesting, that she had a nervous breakdown. And I believe...
Well, if you ever tried to teach music to young people, you can understand it. It is awful.
Is it?
Yeah.
What I found interesting about that was having the nervous breakdown, and I've known people who've had, including close family, that have had nervous breakdowns. I had a physical breakdown one time, and I went to the doctor and told him about it, and had a lot of symptoms of like flu-like symptoms. And my breakdown was physical, and he said, no, your mind was too strong, so your body broke down. was times of great stress. What I've noticed about people, and I could be wrong, and you're the professional, Harold, but what I've noticed is when people have a nervous breakdown, they're never quite the same again.
That is interesting. And the part of the problem is we don't really understand, the general public doesn't understand a lot about that. The nerves don't actually break down. It's a condition where the stress is defined as when demands exceed resources. And so if you're going out to go to work in the morning and your car won't start, you become stressed because you've agreed to go to work at a certain time, and now your resources are diminished. You've got to get another car or another way to get to work. And so as stress builds upon stress, finally people can become quite overwhelmed and confused. Sometimes their immune system begins to weaken, and they may get some kind of illness. Other times it's just simply they become depressed, and in a depressed state, it's hard to make decisions, and so the resources are diminished even more. The stress builds even greater. It's a downward spiral. We call it a nervous breakdown, and it's no fun whatsoever. Anyway, years ago, it was commonly called a nervous breakdown. Now, nowadays, they call it an anxiety attack, or some people have panic attacks, and they have heart palpitations. They think they're going to die. We've got more various diagnoses, and sometimes there's medication that can help. And it's been a very interesting evolution of symptoms and diagnoses and different ways of helping people that are in that situation. And I've never had one myself, but I've helped a lot of people. Joseph?
Thank you, Harold. What I find interesting about it is that having that nervous breakdown, I really believe that set her up to help do the work that she ended up doing. She was in a position now, I think, to relate more to the insanity of alcoholism. I think everything works for good in God's world. There's always a purpose to everything under the sun. And there's no way to prove it either way, but I think that's part of her ability. You know, the bigger the sinner, the greater the saint.
Well, I must say that my difficulties, and especially the big stressors that I went through, the abuse and so forth, once I had recovered from that, gave me a far better ability to empathize with, recognize the need for people to work in that field. And especially with recovery, I think I'm a much better counselor because I've been there, done that. Joseph?
Thank you. When she recovered from her breakdown, she began working as a nurse on August 16th, 1935, the year of the big book, the year of AA started. I don't know what month Bill and Bob got together, but it was pretty close. Sister Ignatia was in charge of admissions at St. Thomas Hospital in Akron, Ohio. She and Dr. Bob Smith admitted the first alcoholic patient who would be the first of millions to participate in the 12-step program of recovery, the beginning of Alcoholics Anonymous. So Dr. Bob is just recently sober, and he's really going for it. He's passionate about this. He's not waiting to ask for anything. He's on a mission. The founding of Alcoholics Anonymous is a topic of great discussion within AA, especially in our literature. It's a discussion that is carried over into the team themselves, and many members pride themselves on rekindling the spirit of our pioneering time. claiming that the program and fellowship itself has been watered down, diluted, and misdirected. Can I get an amen on that?
Yes, yes, yes.
The issues of sponsorship and carrying the message are the spearheads of this controversy. Despite the 10th tradition's complicit suggestion that it's to be avoided, although the suggestion's point of traditions explicitly warns against involvement in outside issues and public controversy. This may obviously mean that inner controversy and inside issues are tolerated, love and accepted. What do you think of that, Harold?
That's very important. The it's interesting that women, Miss Cyberling and Sister Ignatia, were very key elements in helping the first alcoholics in Alcoholics Anonymous gain recovery. And recover from this illness. This is interesting. Go ahead.
Something that is undetermined and overlooked in AA meetings when discussions of a history arise is the fact that many non-alcoholics were involved in the conception and evolution of the organization itself. In fact, were it not for these professional, normal, and temperate drinkers, AA might have not survived its early days of growth and sustainability. One such person is Sister Ignatia, a particular spiritual figure in AA past seems to have eluded the predominant and popular AA literature. There is scarce mention of her in the Big Book itself. In fact, one will only find casual references to her opening dialogue to Dr. Bob's story, of which the excerpt is provided above. Her name does not appear in the first 164 pages. A long list of nominees adorns the history of Alcoholics Anonymous. In addition to Sister Ignatia's contribution are Sam Shoemaker, Dr. Shoemaker. He's an Episcopal minister. Dr. Carl Jung.
Jung. It's like Jung, only Jung.
Jung, thank you. I'm always I always miss Jung that. Dr. Carl Jung. He was the preeminent psychiatrist of his day, along with who's the most famous psychiatrist of them all besides Santa Claus? Who is it?
Sigmund Freud.
Yes, Rudolf the Red-Nosed Sigmund Freud. That's right. Siggy, as his friends would call him. It's all about sex. Father Dowling, a Catholic priest, Lois Wilson herself. And Anne Smith, and, you know, we never get to talk about Anne. Anne was very instrumental, but she's very, very, very sparse mention about Anne, which I think is kind of a tragedy.
Smith's wife, yes. When that first meeting at Mrs. Cyberling's house, not only did Bill Wilson meet Dr. Bob Smith, but he also got to meet Ann Smith, as I understand it. And I'm referring to some of the teachings by Dick B. and Ken B., his son, the great historians.
Right.
On
Harold,
of AA.
When you elevate your voice, it seems to break up more.
Oh, okay. I'll keep my voice down.
Yeah, please.
All right. Well, what I'm getting at is that Dick B., the great historian on AA, writes about Dr. Bob's wife, Ann Smith, along with in recounting Bill Wilson meeting with Dr. Bob that first day. So let's go ahead.
Okay. a long list of nominees. Okay, we did that. All right. Carl Jung, Father Dowd, Lois Wilson, Ann Smith. Without these people, AA might not have ever been become. And it's clear that their involvement with the fellowship has vastly improved and helped evolve the AA way of life. Leave anything up to a group of sorry drunks, and they will muck it up every time. That's my experience. Could these large numbers of erstwhile erratic alcoholics successfully meet and work together? Would there be quarrels over membership, leadership, and money? Would there be strivings for power and prestige? Would there be schisms which would split AA apart? Let's forward to the second edition, Big Book, page XV111-XIX. Yes, in the beginning, it was the non-alcoholic that pointed out the frailty, strength, opportunity, and danger inherent in the largely growing and developing sobriety movement that is now called Alcoholics Anonymous. It wasn't until AA became the guiding force in sobering up drunks that alcoholism became seriously considered and treated as a legitimate disease. Before the 12-step problem drinkers were looked upon as derelicts and miscreants. Who's that? Miscreants?
Miscreant.
It's a miscreant to me. Whose real issue was moral deficiency. When Sister Ignatia fell victim to the belief that she and a few other interested medical professionals could treat drunks, alcoholic recovery really began to take its turn. Did you know that, Harold?
That's very interesting. This is all fascinating to me. I really can't quite understand why all of this has been ignored. This is my first time hearing a lot of this. So anyway, let's continue.
We had one caller come in. I asked him to identify himself and speak, but he opted not to. I closed him, and then finally he dropped off, so there's no telling. The stigma associated with alcoholics was that they were doomed, hopeless, and helpless at first. Sister Ignatia began treating drunks in secret with the help of Dr. Bob Smith and other ER interns that were admitted as having gastritis. Aren't we lucky? It could have been Gastritis Anonymous. It kind of trips a little bit. Hi, I'm not an alcoholic. I just have a lot of gastritis. I'm full of hot air. Anybody got any Beano?
Yeah.
It kind of fits. Most alcoholics are full of hot air.
I'm a Beano junkie.
Gastritis. There we go. Oh, it's another guy. He's got gastritis. All right, bring him in.
Yeah. There we go with the pills.
As their treatment proved successful, oh, man, these people are getting well. Soon, alcoholics began being brought through the front door of the hospital. Wow, he didn't have to come through the back door. An award was secured for this work. No longer were drunks locked up and administered belladonna treatments for their ailments. The real problem was that these people were addressed in 1935. The first official admission of an alcoholic patient was made. I know when Bill W. meets Dr. Bob, that's a great story. I have it on the website. I have it it's on the 12th step. It's titled Billy Pilgrim at the Mayflower. And as the story goes, if we have time, we might get a little bit into that if we go through this quick enough. When Bill first meets Dr. Bob doesn't want to meet with Bill W. He's coerced into it by Henry Eberlin. And Dr. Bob had been trying to get sober for an extended period of time. We don't know exactly how long, but it sounded like years, and was never able to secure sobriety for any length of time. Although he had Jesus the Christ as his Savior, he had the Bible, he was a Bible studier, he was an educated man, he was a doctor, a professional man, a surgeon. Went to church every Sunday, read his scriptures every day, had an intimate relationship with his Savior, and still was not able to get sober. And here's this stockbroker, this drunk stockbroker coming up from New York. He's got a solution for him. Sure, if you believe that, I'll buy the Brooklyn Bridge. So Dr. Bob was kind of took a while. He was a Vermont. They were both from Vermont, though. That was interesting. Bill W. and Dr. Bob were born in Vermont. And so when they got to, Dr. Bob was more of a Vermont Yankee. I think Bill W. was more a New Yorker kind of stockbroker, a man, you know, a talker, a salesman. Dr. Bob was very retiring. He didn't latch on to folks quick. You had to develop a relationship with him. So when Bill walks in and he says, look, I'd like to talk to you about this. So the first thing out of Dr. Bob's mouth was, I'll give you 15 minutes. That's it. Because he doesn't really believe this guy's going to tell him anything. He says, look, you know, I've had the treatment, which means the Belladonna treatment. When they say I had the treatment, had Belladonna. He says, I've been prayed over, tried the religious route. I've been sliced and diced more than a Christmas turkey. I've done everything I knew possible to attain and maintain sobriety, and nothing worked. What are you going to tell me in 15 minutes that's going to keep me sober? Sounded ludicrous. After all this, all these years, I've been trying everything, nothing worked. But you're going to come in, this wise guy from New York is going to come in and tell me how to get sober. Is that about it, Harold?
That was the question on Dr. Bob's mind, and I love Bill W.'s response to that.
Which was?
I'm not here to keep you sober. I'm here to keep me sober. I need to talk to another drunk.
That got Dr. Bob's attention.
Yeah.
Bill wasn't on a mission to save Dr. Bob. Bill was on a mission to save Bill. He knew that the one immunity he had from alcohol was intensive work with another alcoholic that had not been written yet. He knew this intuitively. I believe that came from his spiritual experience. And God was starting to work through him. God uses the weak things of this world to accomplish his ends. So Bill has this innate knowledge, this innate sense of what's right and wrong now as far as creating Alcoholics Anonymous. And that was the statement. And I believe that statement produced Alcoholics Anonymous. The minute that statement left his mouth and Dr. Bob was willing to listen, that was the beginning of the program. Although if you go back a little further, his wife Lois tells him before he goes to the meeting in Akron, it's a proxy battle. And an old employer picked him up for a short period of time to accomplish this end, and it wasn't very successful. It wasn't Bill's fault. It just wasn't working out. Business is business. And he had been working with Skid Row drunks for about 5 months at that time. And he was a little forlorn because, you know, he's had this spiritual experience, God's touched him, and he's out and he's proselyting the word. he's staying sober, and they can do it too. And the other, the Skid Row drunks are not buying it. They're not buying his program. He's not really no program. Basically, it's, you know, it's, I saw God, God touched me, and you can, and they're not buying it. Then he says, Lois, I've been working with these Skid Row drunks, and nobody's staying sober. And she turned around and says, yeah, but you are.
Yes.
And the bell went off. That was the light. That was the first light. The first spark really came to Lois. The second spark came from Dr. Bob. Oh, so you're going to stay sober by helping me. That was the jigsaw puzzle that was missing. One drunk helping another drunk to attain and maintain sobriety in AA. That's the deal, folks. There's no other deal. That's it. We're a group. We're an organization whose sole purpose of being is to be of service to the next sufferer. And by doing that, we're able to maintain sobriety ourselves. That's what we're about. Everything else is dogma. That's the whole deal. That's our primary purpose, as they would say in Star Trek. That's our prime directive.
So it's not only the whole deal, but the people that approached me and helped me a long time ago took no money for that. There's no payment. There's nothing you can pay. There's no payments made. Joseph and I aren't sitting here making money doing this. And for some people, way back 25 years ago when I started, and today as well, some people find that quite hard to believe that people would help them and wouldn't ask for any payment of any kind. Well, there's no cash payment, but there is a payment, and the payment is I get to stay sober, I get to solidify my recovery, I get to improve my conscious contact with God through service. That's my payment. It's not a cash payment, it's something that cash can't buy, much more valuable, and is actually has to do with the kingdom of heaven, and I really, really treasure it. So this is just a terrific program. It's hard to believe for some people. It really is. Don't you agree, Joseph?
It is. It just like Dr. Bob, like that's how I can relate to Dr. Bob, is the natural skepticism that comes from the alcoholic or drug addict that there's a way out. Now, it might work for you, but I'm so unique and special, it's not going to work for me. And if it does, I'll have to tailor make this to my own understanding. The alcoholic and the drug addict, self-centered in the extreme, selfish, self-deluded, self-full of self-pity, just selfish. It's all about me. I might not be much, but I'm all I think about. So when we come into the rooms, we're beating into, Bill W. said, we're beaten into a state of reasonableness. That's a great word, reasonableness. That means we're able to reason out, we can learn, we're teachable. We're reasonable now. Before we came in, we're not reasonable people. You can't reason with us. You can tell a drunk anything, you just can't tell them much. The telephone rang and Sister Ignatia answered. This will give you a little thumbnail of Sister Ignatia. The telephone rang and Sister Ignatia answered it. This is Bill, Sister. I'm sorry, but I'm going to have to send you back the Sacred Heart badge. I've had a rough morning and I'm going out to get a drink. Sister Ignatia sighed but said quickly, don't do it, Bill, until you finish your work at 5. Then call me again. In the meantime, I'll pray for you. Whatever you do, don't send me back that badge. Keep it with you for strength and inspiration. Sister Ignatia prayed hard all afternoon, and finally the call came from Bill. It's okay, Sister. I never took to drink. I think I'm going to be all right now, thanks to the Sacred Heart and you. That was the beginner's chip. That was the beginning of the beginner's chip. Sister Ignatia would give out the Sacred Heart of Jesus medallion. Of course, she's Catholic. And there's a little medallion, you know, and they have a picture of Jesus or a Sacred Heart on it, a little inscription on it. And she would give these medallions to the people after about 6 days sober. Now, alcohol is water-soluble. So usually if you're going to have an adverse reaction from alcohol, it's going to happen fairly quickly. I believe, in about 3 or 4 days, Harold, at most?
Well, if you know someone, let me tell the listeners, just because it's something I like to repeat often. If you know someone that's drinking heavily, please ask them not to suddenly stop. Because if you drink heavily and you stop suddenly, you can have a seizure and die within an hour. So keep that in mind, everybody.
Yeah, Harold, that's I've seen that. Grandma's seizure is not that far-fetched with quick stopping from alcohol. More people die from alcohol overdose than any other drug or all the other drugs combined.
Yes.
I was talking to a heroin addict. It was on another show. Great show. Peter with Cool AA Stuff. He's got a really good show. And this heroin addict called in, and he was, when they hear that more people die from alcohol overdose than heroin, it kind of surprises them. They didn't realize that alcohol is a drug. The only difference between alcohol and heroin is illegal, but so was alcohol, so not too that many years ago. So a drug is a drug is a drug. Alcohol is just that much more available. You got to go through a little bit more dark shadows. You know, my dad says, never do business with anybody who starts the conversation with the word psst. it's a dark shadow deal with the drugs because you have to get someone to provide them. Where the liquor and the alcohol is on every street corner, in every supermarket, around the country and around the world. I don't think you can go more than, in most places, a mile from your doorstep and not find some alcohol somewhere for sale. So you could see why that would be a huge problem. So it's the same deal. You know, whether it's heroin or alcohol or whatever your drug of choice is, these are deadly. People say, well, nobody ever died of an overdose of marijuana. All I can tell them is, you didn't smoke like me then. Marijuana is usually a gateway drug. You know, people don't want to hear that. They'll say, well, you know, they're trying to legalize it in Oregon. And there was a conversation on Facebook about that. And I said, yeah, that's a great – I says, you know, the one good news about if you legalize marijuana, I says, you'll probably have less shootings in that area from the children because they'll be so stoned, even if they bring a gun to school, they'll surely forget the bullets. After sobering up for a few days, Sister Ignatia would present these patients with a token representing personal commitment to God. Here's your little token. So this is the beginning of the beginner's chip. Alcoholics Anonymous and the 12-step program, the only requirement for accepting the Sacred Heart Medallion is that the patient, if the patient was considering a return to the drink, the coin would have to be given back. There's a nuance in there. It's not that you drank and gave the medallion back. If you were thinking about drinking, if you're thinking about drinking, taking that drink, now you're going to have to get the medallion back. So it's not the act, it's the thought. Isn't that interesting, Harold?
That's cool. I think that really is the essence of the whole thing. It's become watered down these days in AA meetings that I've gone to, and we don't actually ask for the coin back. We tell the person to come back, keep coming back. But I like the idea that if you're thinking about drinking, you have to bring the coin back. That means you haven't had a drink yet, and there's a chance for us to connect and to help you through it.
You're not saying Joseph.
Oh, okay. I will.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead, Joseph.
Oh, thank you. I train. You know, once I'm housebroken, I got to go that way. I tell my sponsees as an agreement, I'm putting time and effort into their recovery, and I tell them I'll put as much time and effort as they do, no more, no less. I don't pursue them because I believe we avoid what pursues us and we pursue what avoids us. Sounds like dating. I'll give a sponsee a couple calls, but one of the agreements I make with them, I says, okay, this is an agreement, and I have this agreement with them. If you're thinking about drinking, if you want to have a drink, before you take that drink, give me a call. If we talk and you're still hell-bent on taking that drink, I'll drive you to the liquor store. I have no control over these folks. If an alcoholic makes up his mind to have a drink, there's no power on earth that's going to stop him. The only power that's going to stop him is spiritual power. He's got to take an action. He's got to get on his knees and ask God to remove craving. He's got to pick up the 500-pound telephone and ask for help. He's got to do something. But my experience is once the alcoholic has made up their mind to take, and sometimes it's not even a making up mind, it just sounded like a good idea at the time, and they just go with the flow. Most of the time, once in a great while, I'll get the call. And we try to work it out. We get together. I'll go to Starbucks. You know, I won't go to the wall with them, but I'll definitely go to Starbucks. I'll take my time. Comes in the middle of the night if I answer the phone. Whatever I got to do to help him stay sober, I'm willing to do that if he's willing to meet me halfway. I'll go as far as he's willing to go. He makes the call, I'm on my way. But unfortunately, most alcoholics don't call their sponsors before the drink. You know why, Harold?
Well, they know what'll probably happen.
Yeah. They know what to say. They don't want to be discouraged from their direction. They've already made up their mind. By the time that happens, most sponsees have made up their mind. They're going to have the drink no matter what, whether they can handle it or whether the dog died or the wife yelled at him or whatever circumstance presented itself to give them a license to take that first drink. And if they call their sponsor, the sponsor's going to say it's going to take him up short. And he's not looking to be taken up short. He's looking to get loaded. So this is a great thought in AA. If you're thinking about having your drink, give us back the beginner's chip. Give us back your chip before you have that drink. It's an agreement. Some will follow through with it. Some won't. Sister Ignatia claimed that the real backbone of this effort was Ann Smith, Dr. Bob's dutiful wife. When Sister Ignatia was not sure of what the next right thing to do and did not want to bother the doctor, Dr. Bob, with every, I have dart and fiddle, for there were 5,000 that found beds and a new way of living. So she didn't want to bother the doctor. You know, she's a nurse and he had a lot on his plate. she would call Ann. See, nobody knows that. You didn't know that, did you, Harold?
No, I had no idea. I really treasure learning some of these little details because some of the biggest faith-building ideas are in the little details. I just love this. This is great, Joseph. I'm glad you ferreted this out. Joseph?
Thank you. Well, Oliver of Oliver's got a show. It's Half Measures Room, and that's on Tuesday nights again. He had a little sabbatical, but he's back on now. It's a great show. It's called Half Measures Room. It's 9 o'clock on Blog Talk. So if you check out Half Measures Room, you're going to be more than enjoyed. Oliver wrote most of this piece. He brought it up in the show about the beginner's chip, and I had no idea. But as soon as I heard it, I was enthralled. I love stuff like that. How things started and what people thought, you know, back, especially in the new, how things evolve and we get lost in the stream of time. And to me, this is important. Some people wouldn't think, oh, I enjoy this stuff. I think Harold would too. If you got long-term sobriety, this might have an interest for you. If you're just struggling to stay sober, this might not have any meaning to you. The meaning to you is get a sponsor and start working the steps. And if the craving comes, get on your knees and ask God to remove that craving. And if you start working the steps with a sponsor and you keep that in mind, we just try to keep it simple. It's a sales term. It used to mean keep it simple, stupid. We don't want to complicate this thing. This is a simple program for complicated people. We're thinkers. We're movers and we're shakers. And sometimes we actually do something. But most of the time, we'll tell you exactly. I'll speak for myself. I'm an expert in whatever field you decide to talk about. She would rely on Ann, as she always knew exactly what to do. Ann Smith. Sister Ignatia also claimed that women had a harder time getting sober because they would have the innate ability to stay in denial that much longer. This is where Ann really came in handy. Ann would always have an insight otherwise denied to others. So Dr. Bob, even though I know this is a new program, so women coming into the program was really unique at the time. They didn't know what to do with women. Women were considered, from the Oxford group, the Oxford group was a men's Christian organization. When a woman was an alcoholic, she was considered fallen, a fallen woman, beyond redemption. How do you like that, huh?
Wow.
So they didn't know what to do with women. They don't, you know, why go through it? Because once a woman had become an alcoholic, there was no path to regain paradise for her. Her lot was already acknowledged. That was it. That she couldn't go any further. It took a while before they let women into AA. But now that was different. You know, there was a couple clubs, and then finally they were able to break the barriers. One woman, she was a black woman, she would listen to the doors of the meeting to see what the drunks were saying inside. So the men would go into one side, and then their wives would go with Lois Wilson into the kitchen, and that's how Al-Anon started. So Ann was really instrumental. She would help with some of the things that otherwise Dr. Bob didn't know what to do, Sister Ignatia didn't know what to do, and Ann Smith was the backbone. And this is from, and when I hear that from Sister Ignatia, what I hear is abject humility. when you hear her, I've heard to Peter from Cool AA Stuff sent me 2 25-minute tapes of Sister Ignatia speaking. If you want it, Harold, I'll forward them to you.
That's wonderful. Are they going to be on your website, rumradio.org?
I haven't figured out how to download that to the website. I wanted to, but I haven't figured out how to do that yet. I think that would be a nice little addition to this, too. Somebody could go a little deeper and actually listen to Sister Ignatia tell
us.
Yeah.
Last week you told me about Dropbox.com. And so I went ahead and downloaded that and installed it. It's a free program where you can share files with others. And I think that's going to be a valuable plus
resource
for us to share things. So I appreciate you mentioning that. So we've got about 5 minutes.
Yeah. All right. Okay. Yeah, we're finishing up. We're just about. In collaboration with Dr. Bob, they convinced the powers that be, and that's the hospital board, to put on an alcoholic wing. What does an alcoholic wing look like? Is that a wing? Is that a wing with feathers missing, or there's a lot of brightly colored feathers, or
wings, but without the hot?
Is that when pigs fly? Is that an alcoholic wing? It was paid for and built by the alcoholics. Wow. So that's the only way they were going to get the hospital board to agree to put it on. It had to be built for and paid for by the alcoholic. The wing was named Rosary Hall. You know what a rosary is, right? A Catholic rosary?
Yes, the prayer beads that the Catholics use.
Yeah, the prayer beads. And each bead represents a prayer. I think there's like the Our Father. I'm a Reformed Catholic, so there's an Our Father, the Apostles' Creed, the Hail Mary. I think there's a couple. But you fondle the bead, and then I think when you're saying the prayer, you do that, and then it has a cross connected to it. So it's a prayer, basically. So it's all about prayer. And so they're calling it Rosary Hall. because every time you saw a rosary, you would think of prayer. And it was through the prayers of the penitent. And I put that myself, the penitent, but it was through the prayers of a lot of folks that this work and this wing was there. And that's what Sister Ignatia believed, that people prayed to get this work going. And through those prayers. But, you know, and her humility comes shining through again, because it wasn't about her. She'd be the first to tell you it was Ann Smith, it was Dr. Bob. Like, you know, she really, like, she wasn't even there. She's also known as the Little Angel. Did you know that?
Yes, she looks like a little angel.
Yeah, she's a little angel, just nothing, 90 pounds, soaking wet kind of girl. And the drunks would run her savage sometimes because she was just so meek and mild, you know, but she had the heart of a lion, no doubt. So the sister wanted to name the wing after Dr. Bob. And in a way she did. It was finally called Rosary Hall Solarium. You get it? In honor of Dr. Bob's initials,
yeah,
Robert Holbrook Smith, the initials on the doors read RHS. Rosary Hall Solarium. Harold? Any last
words?
Well,
I'm really, really glad Oliver wrote that piece, and I'm glad that you got permission to use it. I love this stuff, and I appreciate AA, and I'm really interested in going back to the roots, getting back to basics, and so And I appreciate everybody that tuned in. I hope it helps your recovery as much as it has mine. Joseph?
Thank you, Harold. Again, Rum Radio, we're in 150 foreign countries, including Mississippi, over 2,600 town, cities, and villages, and we've had over 200,000 hits to the website. So if you're looking for sponsorship information, whether you're NA, CA, AA, or Paranoids Anonymous, where they won't tell you where they hold the meetings, this is good sponsorship information. Al-Anon, all you do, and you'd be a little creative, you plug in your basic text to your fellowship. Other than the first step, all the steps read the same. So all you got to do, you plug in heroin, you plug in narcotics, you plug in cocaine, and the sponsorship information is all the same. So you just plug in that your information, and you're good to go. Be a little creative, a little imaginative. You put a little effort into it, and it's well worth the effort. A lot of good tools. Who has enough tools? I have one sponsor call me one time, and he said, you know, I use Rum Radio. He says, I supplement that with my sponsorship. Great. That's what it's there for. You don't have to do it as an outline. These are just tools. Take what you need and leave the rest. And it's good. It's a good work for a good reason and a good cause. So, Harold, good night. And remember,
see you on the radio.
RumRadio.org. Good night.